Sunday Roast, and we're back. First of all, my co-host Liz, can you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, I'm Liz Webster, and I am the founder of Save British Farming, and I love talking to you about food and farming and why that matters for everyone.
Yay. Rob, please, can you introduce yourself? You are a regular.
Yeah, sure. About my fifth or sixth time on, Alex, but for those that haven't seen me before, I run the Truth to Power channel on YouTube, been going for about 3 or 4 years, created out of Brexit. Been kicking at the Tories for the last 2 or 3 years and now kicking at Labour instead, and keeping up with what's going on over the pond as well.
Who would have thought that?
I am Ollie from the YouTube channel Farming Explained. We look at stuff to do with food and countryside. At the minute, mostly historical stuff, but we will soon look at, you know, ecology and climate change and all the fun stuff that people moan about. And also probably the news, as you may have seen.
I'm Alex. I'm a historian, YouTuber, apparently a political scientist as well now. Didn't know that existed. And author. And my YouTube channel is Political X. Let's get straight into it. We talked about this last week. Donald Trump winning the election. Isn't that just amazing fun? We're not going to do too much on it, but I do want to go back on it because more stuff's come to the forefront about him winning, his cabinet picks, and also being blackmailed by Russia, which is not being reported on the mainstream media. Liz. What are your thoughts on Donald Trump re-entering our lives once again?
I think in 2016, when he won, I was actually at the peak of hysteria, as in screaming, terrified. And, you know, that sort of boiling frog, you're sort of put in hot water and you're screaming. And there's so much been going on over the last years that I'm now at the stage where I've run out of scream and I've run out of panicking about it. And I think I did prepare myself for him winning quite well. So I'm in a sort of cold silence of screaming and thinking, oh my God, how are we going to survive this? And that's about it.
That's it. That's it. Have you got any thoughts on why he won?
Well, it looks very similar to Brexit. And it's kind of similar. I think we're already seeing Labour making lots of mistakes here, which make people polarise and spring to the other camp. I didn't think that people would forget so quickly how shit the Tories were. Because now Labour are in a competition to be even more shit than they are, and or they were, in a different way. And when you're in a first-past-the-post system with two big parties, what do? You keep swinging from one to the other, and it keeps getting worse, essentially. So
that's optimistic.
You know, I think as well, the other thing I realised, because I was in New Zealand a couple of years ago, and everyone over here loved Jacinda Ardern, so, and I did. And when I got to New Zealand, I realised that everyone absolutely detested her. And every single person I spoke to in New Zealand was like, that woman, she's got to go. And I put a clip up of two people talking to me about Jacinda in a market in Christchurch. And all of my Twitter followers went absolutely mad and said, how dare I go and talk to Brexiteers in New Zealand? And they wouldn't have it that Jacinda was unpopular in New Zealand, even though I was in New Zealand. And in the end, I had to delete the video because I was getting so much hate on my Twitter account.
Holy crap. That's crazy. I'm not shocked. I mean, there is an element of sort of brainwashing, I guess, within that, isn't there? Because they think that you're not really speaking to real people and you've gone out your way or you've edited out all the nice people.
We're sort of seeing it now as well, which we'll go into later. But it is when people have got a formed opinion, and it's almost as if social media causes this black and white thinking, and it's not asking questions, as in, oh, you're in New Zealand and you're speaking to thousands of people and what are they saying? No, it is literally, I am right and I am going to attack anyone who says something I don't agree with. And Twitter particularly encourages that sort of behaviour.
Yeah, it does. It's been interesting to see so many people leaving Twitter recently, or the claim is from, I think The Guardian just said that they left.
Yeah.
And that seems to have done a bit of an exodus. It all seemed to happen after Trump. Rob, what are your thoughts?
Well, I left Twitter completely. I think I had about 6,500 followers. It was a very difficult decision, but I've walked away. And people say they're staying to sort of protect it and keep it real and everything, but I think they're just being played by Musk. I think we're enabling Musk by staying on there. We're normalising his atrocious behaviour, the way his algorithms are pushing. I logged in one day, and I, well, couple of days running, and I had a GB News advert pinned at the top of my timeline, and that was the final straw for me. I came off. But it's interesting what Liz was saying about having the hatred on the videos. It's so bad she took it down. If I took down every video where I had hatred of that spell, Liz, I wouldn't have any videos left on my channel.
No, Rob, it was full on. It was full on hatred. Yeah. It was really, really bad. And I just thought, well, it's not worth doing this. I'm not getting the message across by doing this. So I decided to delete it.
Yeah.
I was on holiday as well. I didn't need that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. and to be fair, I don't get death threats for every video.
Have you had death threats?
Have you not?
Definitely. No.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah.
You're not serious.
I am totally serious, yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised you don't, actually.
What are you trying to say, Rob? What the fuck?
I'm not because you're a provocative voice in progressive politics, Alex, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's interesting because obviously Liz made the connection between Trump and Brexit. Both were children of 2016. Both represented a move towards populism. And the way I see it is that with Brexit, the British electorate failed their intelligence test. And the American electorate have now failed their intelligence test for a second time with Trump. But I'm really more concerned this time around because I think last time, obviously, he knew the government, he didn't know which levers to pull. But this time I get the impression he's got a bit more clue. Some of his picks, I know you're going to be talking about, Alex, are completely ludicrous. It's like he's filling up the clown car, you know. But already, you know, he's not even president yet. And my main concern, obviously, I'm British, so my concern is the interface with Britain. And already we're seeing murmurings from the Trump camp about the deal that's been done between Starmer and Mauritius to hand back the Chagos Islands. And there's now talk that already Trump's team are getting involved to try and veto that deal. And, you know, we're only in November. He's not president until January. But I think
Rob, what happens if that deal is scotched? Presumably, then that could ensure that the USA lose their airbase there.
Well,
under international law, is it not? Is that not true?
Well, you're absolutely right. It's about international law, and at the moment, Keir Starmer is just complete. You know, the Tories having a pop at him as well, but Keir Starmer is just completing a process that was kicked off by the Tories.
Yeah. And
whatever you say about Keir Starmer, he's a really good lawyer, and he really does follow the rule of law. And you're absolutely right. It's international law. The Chagos Islands should be handed back to Mauritius. If Trump's people scotch the deal, I've got an idea there's going to be a military intervention. They'll probably say, because it's that sort of sphere of operations where China's very active. And I don't think one minute that a USA are going
to... They also forget that it was the Tories who handed back Hong Kong to China as well.
To be fair to them, it was a contract deal, wasn't it? There was no...
There
was no way they were going to get an extension on that. I mean, it was literally that whole... escapade was based on the fact that we were forcing opium into the country.
Only Britain can vote to leave something. Only they're allowed to vote to leave something. Everyone else is, you know, has to go through some sort of war and goodness knows what to do something which the British don't agree with, or the Americans.
Yeah, well, look at Scotland. They're not allowed to leave. They've got less say in the ability to leave than we did with the EU. Which is insane. If they wanted to have an election to leave and or a referendum to leave, then that's the end of it. I don't see what business that is of ours or the UK's or Westminster, but they don't see it like that. And I mean, the irony of that happening, I think, sorry, Ollie, I'm going to bring you in.
I think
Farage did it today, didn't he? Because he was saying it was a referendum that was advisory. And then he said it in Parliament, and he didn't seem to figure out that the same thing happened with the Brexit referendum. It was advisory. He was even talking about grabbing a gun and going down to Parliament if they wouldn't push it through. And yet he's now saying the opposite with Chagos, but he's a grifter, isn't he? Ollie, welcome to the chat. What are your thoughts on Trump and his victory? Any thoughts on why?
Well, I think the reason why is similar to what Liz said, I would argue, which is that what has traditionally been the left has sort of lost touch with the working class, essentially, and is often seen as quite patronising on social issues, at least, which leads people to not support it. You know, they look to these often quite metropolitan groups of politicians and don't see themselves in the modern left-wing parties, so they turn away from Labour and the Democrats, and that's sort of driving them away. But one thing I did think is when When big things happen, everyone always muses about how intelligent George Orwell was. But I think since Brexit, obviously, we're somewhat dislocated from Europe. And if we decide to suck up to America and they pull out of Ukraine, you could end up with his world map where you have America and us being airstrip one, Russia and Europe united, and China. I just a thought I had. He's a very intelligent man, wasn't he? You know,
yeah,
very smart man.
He knew about his propaganda. It's interesting as well that you were saying that, because there's some of the feedback that's been coming through this week, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to just slightly bring it up again, was down to the fact that lots of Americans were suffering from inflation, and the messaging coming from the Democratic Party was, no, it's good. You're fine. Mm. You're moaning for the wrong reasons, and then comparing it to countries they're unlikely to ever go to or have any connection. Yeah. And you're like, wow, that was so... What? I think what could have been better is we're going to make it better. These are the foundations. First 4 years are foundations. We've got a plan to accelerate this and make things better. That's a nice slogan. I mean, it's a Labour slogan, isn't it? Because they had the Take That song, wasn't it? Things can only get better.
Yeah.
Nice. Doreen, yeah. Actually. Alex,
was it Doreen?
Doreen, yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. Why on earth? I'm going to get... See, that's where you get death threats from. It's like, sit like that.
Yeah. You're dissing Professor Brian Cox. So, yeah.
Oh, my God, he was in it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's so wild. What a career.
Like my age, yeah. But yeah. Excuse, you're a youngster. Yeah.
The cabinet picks. Holy shit.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, that looks so much fun. Rob, do you want to bring us in a little bit on that?
I just think it's really funny that this guy, Peter Hegseth, he's on Fox and Friends. He's a TV presenter, but he's not good enough for the proper weekday show. He's on Fox and Friends weekend show. So he's not qualified enough to be on the prime time drive time show in the morning. Now, Pete Hegseth obviously sucks up to Trump a lot, which is the main qualification for any job in Trump's cabinet. He did actually serve in Afghanistan, apparently, but he's got absolutely no experience of government, and he is the new proposed defense secretary. So he'll be the one that's sort of interfacing with NATO. And it's probably, from the point of view of Britain, is the most important appointment that Trump will make. And we're getting a Fox News host.
He did serve, though, didn't he?
Yeah, in Afghanistan, he did serve. Yeah, but he's had no experience in government at all, Alex. You know, and they're saying, oh, that's a big, big advantage for him. The fact that he's not been muddied by the swamp. You know, he's come from without any fucking idea. Well, yeah, that's the genius. And I'm going to say something really positive about Trump, just to cheer Liz up, apart from anything else. I think there is one move of absolute genius that Donald Trump's done with his cabinet picks. And I really approve. Seriously, I'm not being sarcastic. Elon Musk is into Dogecoin, you know, this Bitcoin wannabe thing. And Trump has set up this thing called the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. Do you see what he did there? And he's allowed Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, who's a multi-billionaire as well, that was his competitor in the presidential nomination a while back. But the thing is that this Department of Government Efficiency is not actually a department. It's a misnomer. It's actually, I hate people that do this, you know, the little rabbits. But it's not a department at all. It's an advisory committee. So I think what Trump's very skillfully done, let's give the guy credit, is he's taken the huge psychopaths, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, competitive psychopaths to him, obviously, he's a narcissistic psychopath. And he said, yeah, there you go, boys. You're in charge of this Department of Government Efficiency. And I think what he's done very skillfully is he's just sidelined them. He's given them absolutely no responsibility whatsoever. Wow. That's brilliant.
But do you think he did that on purpose?
Yeah, I think. I'm going to give him credit on this one, Alex, honestly. I might be wrong, but I think he's played a blinder. He's thought, I know what I'm going to do with these two guys. I'm going to give them their little toy to play with, keep themselves amused in the sandpit, and I'll carry on with the real business of government without them.
And he just got Elon Musk for free to promote him.
He didn't do the real business of government last time. He just kept tweeting all the time.
Yeah, that's right. On the toilet at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Or playing golf. Or playing golf, to be fair. It wasn't completely inaccurate.
Let's look at this for a minute. This is like you're flying a plane and you're getting a bit annoyed with the turbulence because the plane's going all over the place. And megalomaniac, narcissistic psychopaths are in the plane. They go, oh, we've had enough of this air turbulence. We know how to fly this plane better. We're going to take charge. That's where I think it is, because they actually are frustrated with regulations. Yeah. And they don't understand that if you get rid of the regulations, then it's just going to turn to absolute carnage. That you just have to have regulations. You have to.
Mm-hmm. It's the libertarian wing of MAGA, isn't it? It's just they just don't see that, you know, any regulations are bad regulations as far as these libertarians are concerned.
Well, you say that. The neoliberals seem to be really pissed off this morning. So this is recorded on Thursday. They're pretty hacked off with him because of some of the appointments he's made. So you guys ready for a bit of true and false?
Yeah.
True or false? Matt Gaetz, the Attorney General nominee, has faced an ethics investigation into sexual assault of a minor. True or false? What do you think? Would Trump pick someone for that reason?
That's true. I mean, he
went to a
congressional inquiry. He's been sex trafficking minors, basically. He's had a series of relationships with minors. He's got the video to prove it, and he's been showing off on the floor of the House of Representatives in the past how great his seduction skills are. So,
What has he done on the floor? He's been like flirting with people.
He's got a thing for young girls. As you probably know, the age of consent in America is 18. Mm. And he's got a real thing for teenagers below the age of 18. The inquiry is about him sex trafficking them, moving them across state borders for sex. So,
And so there's a tiny bit extra to that as well. He's under investigation of the Ethics Committee within Congress. Mm. He's now quit Congress and taken up this position. So that entire investigation now, in theory, should go to nothing. Yeah.
That's right. It's now over.
Now over. But I would hope that they then send it to the police. Vivek Ramaswamy must partner for the Department of Government Efficiency, which you mentioned earlier, Rob, spark controversy for calling for the elimination of several federal agencies, including the Department of Education. True or false? What does everyone think? Do they want to get rid of the Department of Education?
I think that's true. I'm not absolutely confident, but I've heard that they wanted to get rid of it. So I presume it was him that said it, was it?
Okay. Liz?
I think it's probably true, yeah. Depressingly.
And Rob?
I don't know if it's Vivek Ramaswamy, but I know there were proposals to get rid of the Department for Education, so I'm going to say true as well. Yeah.
Congratulations, you all. It is true. Their aim is to get rid of the Department of Education.
Well, they say that in terms of government expenditure in the USA, they say that the annual budget, there's 1.9 trillion of it is what they call discretionary. So it wouldn't, you know, it's spent on things other than defense, education, health, whatever. 1.9 trillion is the total spend. They're saying that Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk want to make savings of 2 trillion. So more than the 1.9 trillion complete discretionary expenditure. So that's where we're at.
I mean, it's funny because we always brought up I've forgotten the guy who's been put in charge of the Department of Defense. What's his name?
Department of Defense, Pete Hegseth. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
We know. I mean, every time you come on, I end up bringing up the alien thing. Do you know they had the congressional meeting yesterday on whether or not UAPs exist and what they are and what they do?
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That got bypassed in the news along with so many other things. But one of the things that they said in there is that there are billions going into that just disappear into a black hole and no one knows what happens with the money. So it's going to be really interesting to see if those two are stupid enough to go and start trying to cut the budget for the US military. Because I assume if they start trying to meddle with any of that, they're going to get whacked. Because that's the other thing that came out of the congressional meetings, two of them that they've now had on UAPs, is that people are being threatened and they disappear, is what's being claimed. And we've got people, So the guys that they had on yesterday was an admiral. But I couldn't clarify if he was admiral of a department or admiral of like one of the fleets. Then you had two guys who were the equivalent of MI5, MI6 being brought in. And then you had a journalist. So you go, they could all be talking nonsense. They could have all been fed nonsense. But if they're telling the truth and they were all seemingly saying that people disappear when you meddle with these people, is Elon Musk going to deal with that? Because it's billions that go into that black hole of military spending, I can't see them meddling with that because that's the type of stuff that makes you disappear. Any thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, I hope that they just do a lot of this inflammatory talking, as you know, as we've seen with Cummings and all of the rest of them, just to stir up their base and just to get emotions high. I'm hoping that that's what it is. Because when Trump was last in office, I don't know how much they actually got done, you know, work they got done, apart from that he ended up with all of those confidential documents in his house.
He did. Trump definitely talked about the education department being gotten rid of, and he wants to give it over to the states. That's what he wants to do. And then he said, basically, you'll get funding, but if you start teaching anything I don't like, I'm going to cut your funding. That's what he said, which is also wild.
And if they provide any vaccinations of any sort, he will get rid of their funding, he's saying, even though it's state law that they have to be vaccinated against, I think, BCG, for example, and they have to take polio. It's in federal law. But he's saying, if they go ahead and actually stick to the law, he's going to remove their funding. So it's just an excuse to remove funding from public schooling. They want to get rid of public schooling, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. And you're telling me he's not allowing them to children to have vaccinations?
He's saying that if schools provide the vaccinations that they have to provide by law, that he will remove their funding. He wants zero vaccinations from schools.
That's just going to cause an epidemic.
Basically, the people that can't afford to pay for the vaccinations are going to get... We're going to have...
You'll see the return of polio and tuberculosis and all the rest.
Smallpox.
Measles.
Yeah.
Wow. He's doing well, isn't he, so far with his cabinet picks? Do you want another true and false one? You're not going to believe. Trump has appointed ambassador to Israel someone who doesn't believe that the West Bank and Gaza exist. True or false?
What is he doing?
I mean, it caused problems last time by moving the US embassy to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Which just caused chaos.
Yeah. And what's funny, you were talking earlier about why people have, you know, gone to Trump and left the Democratic Party. A lot of responses from places like Michigan, the Rust Belt, is that they didn't like Biden's policy on Israel, that it wasn't sympathetic enough to the Palestinians. So they vote for Trump instead. It's just ridiculous. You know, he's far more pro-Israel than Biden ever was. It's
absolutely wackadoodle. And speaking of that, and the last bit of Trump, would you like me to update you on what's happened with the blackmailing and what Putin did to him immediately upon election?
Yes, please.
So he's done four things, okay? So obviously Trump has been going around saying that he's going to bring a peace deal to Ukraine and and Russia. And within 24 hours of him being elected, Putin instantly puts out on his political news channels images of Melania naked.
Oh my God.
With his political commentators mocking her for being naked and taking naked pictures for what she was. I mean, she was a model. She's quite proud of that work, which is just like, what? Like, that's just, so he insults his wife. Then Trump claimed that he made a phone call to Putin. The Kremlin came out and said that phone call never took place. It never happened. So he insulted his wife on national TV repeatedly on political programs and then essentially said that he's got dementia because it didn't happen. So you're going, what? Then it doesn't end. He then obviously wanted everything to calm down, and he claimed in the Washington Post that everything should get de-escalated, and he wanted Putin to de-escalate, and he said that in the call to him. Putin has just moved 50,000 troops to the Kursk border, which Ukrainians have taken. So instead of de-escalating, he's actually escalated, which is fucking wild. He's literally done the opposite of what he's promised. Bear in mind, he was meant to finish this in 24 hours. This is meant to be over, no more war. Then it didn't end there, because Putin's presidential aide, head of national security, and apologies if I butcher the name, Patrushev, came out in Russian media, I think it's TASS and a couple of others, and basically said Trump needs to know his place because he has obligations to us because we did him favors, which is essentially a very unsubtle way of saying you owe us and probably we own you, just so you're aware. And bear in mind that the Russians until that point have been saying there's no Russian interference. We haven't done anything in your elections. We've avoided you. Trump's backed that up against national security, the FBI and the CIA. So he's chosen Putin over them. And then Putin's just thrown him under the bus. And the thing that's wild about that the most, nothing in the press. MSN, Newsweek, and a couple other newspaper outlets have reported on it. Nothing on the BBC, nothing in the Washington Post, nothing in any newspapers that I've seen in the UK. And I'm going, what the fuck is that about? That surely is a huge news story. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, this I'm going to do the weave. I'm going to do the weave, as Trump says. I'm going to bring all this back to what we were talking about earlier, which is his key picks for his new cabinet. Because one of the ones we didn't mention, there's a woman, I don't know if you're aware of her, called Tulsi Gabbard.
Yep.
She was a former Democratic congresswoman. Very, very pro-Russia. Very pro-Russia. A Putin apologist. And he has made her, or is wanting to make her, he's proposing to make her, director of national intelligence. And of all the picks we've talked about, that is by far the strangest, because it goes back to what you were just saying, Alex. If they own him, who would they want him to appoint? If Putin could choose Trump's director of national intelligence, Putin would choose Tulsi Gabbard. There we are. She's in.
Yeah. One thing that I did think was interesting about her, though, is that he has picked for loyalty, but at the same time picked lots of people who have not always been loyal, because she was a Democrat until very recently, in the same way that Vance famously was a never-Trumper and flipped. So he's picked for loyalty, but he's also picking people that I think must know better, which makes this much scarier than last time. Because, I mean, Vance is a smart man, isn't he? And he knows what's going on, which makes him very scary, I think.
Do you think he's an intelligent guy? I can't get a read, to be honest.
I do think. I think he's an intelligent guy who has made a decision to do what he's doing.
So might be wrong, Ollie, you mean? You think he sold his soul?
I think he sold his soul. Yes, I do.
Sort of Matt Goodwin type of character, potentially. Do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
You need to explain to me who Matt Goodwin is. I've missed this one.
He's an academic, isn't he? Who's suddenly become, he's always on GB News and become very right wing all of a sudden.
He got ripped apart by Medi, didn't he?
So, and you do know that he knows better because you know he's intelligent. I mean, I'm not suggesting for a minute that all right wing people are not intelligent. Generally, if you're well educated, you do understand, particularly if you've done history, you do understand the ramifications of becoming very, very right wing. So yes, I don't know. I mean, I think there are players on the chessboard who've decided to move into these areas, which are deeply uncomfortable and scary.
Well, I think if you're intelligent and educated, you tend not to flip sides, irrespective of which side you're on. You tend not to get to middle age and then be like, oh, I was wrong the whole time. And you know, that tends not to happen.
But we've seen that with Robert Jenrick. I mean, he's a classic example. You know, one minute he was one thing, and the next minute he's really scarily gone the other way. But I think perhaps that's showing us how politicians get their jobs and win, because they're going in and playing a part of a puppet. So puppeteering. Yeah,
well, career politicians have got to do what's best for their career, haven't they?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's the segue that into Labour then, its unpopularity. Do you think they're doing what's best for the country? Go on, Ollie. What do you think? They're
I have tunnel vision at the minute. I must confess, I've been focusing on agriculture, which I think is not in the best interest of the country. Broadly, I would hesitate to attack them on the whole. I'm not sure how prominent in everyone's mind the agricultural policy is, but I think, you know, as they are saying, they have been dealt a difficult set of cards, and I think they are probably, on the whole, being quite sensible, although Liz might disagree. I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. I have tunnel vision at the minute. I must admit, I'm focused on farming, which, you know, makes me feel very passionately against Labour at the moment, but I want to, you know, I'm moderating myself.
Go on, Liz.
Well, I thought Starmer did a really good job in the riots, and I absolutely defended him when he was being criticised. But I think they've made some... I think this budget is a disaster. You know, when you're a business person, you understand that you can't rob Peter to pay Paul. And they promised growth. And I thought that they would get back as close to Europe as possible to generate growth, because business would find it easier to import and export. And that is the easiest thing to do. And I thought he was scared of the red wall, and so he was going to do it, you know, step by stealth. But no, we're not doing that. We're robbing Peter to pay Paul, which is going to actually ensure more inflation, more poverty, and more problems. And also, they are going hard after agriculture in a culture war, which a lot of people don't understand will ensure a crashing of the food system, because it's close to collapse anyway because of all of the problems of the last few decades. And that means if we were still in the European Union and they were going to use, you know, disaster capitalism to destroy British agriculture, you could sleep at night because you'd know that we've got the right to food from Europe. But we broke off. We broke off our arrangement with Europe. And what you ought to have done is you should have increased food production to bolster your country. But the Conservatives weakened it considerably. And now the Labour government have decided to largely kill it off. And one has to ask, what are they intending to do? And I can only see, with Mandelson being favourite for the US, whatever you call him, commissioner, is that they're going to try and do the trade deal again. And Trump will come out and give the worst trade deal like he did last time. And everyone's going to lose their shit about chlorinated chicken again. And the business is not going to be happy, because if we diverge from EU standards, we're going to have, you know, no end in sight to the trade barriers. So I really am at odds to know what they're doing. They've decided to come in and try and do what the Conservatives couldn't do, which is trying to make Brexit work by going to America and thinking there's some bridge of having a deal and still having cake and eat it. And I can't see how that works personally. And I think agriculture is the sacrificial lamb of Brexit, and now it's the sacrificial lamb of the Labour government, when the world is in chaos and you're going to be looking for the world to feed you, and you've destroyed your domestic ability to feed your populace and the good system that you had with the EU. So I can only see problems with food. Problems with food mean problems with society. So I think it's a disaster from that point of view. I know most people think that food grows in the supermarket, but it doesn't. It comes from farms. And these farms are really struggling to produce food. Not only that, the government are paying us not to produce food, which is even more mad. So, you know, my concern is for people's food, a basic commodity that without that you can't eat. Not Jeremy Clarkson. And not Dyson. In fact, from a farming perspective, Dyson in particular is doing a bloody good job on food. You can't criticise his farms. He's employing people. He's investing a shed loads of money in what is not, a good investment. Farming is not a good investment. He's employing people and he's using innovation to create a sustainable farming model. I don't agree with him at all on Brexit and his taking everything over to Singapore. But from a farming perspective, he's done a good job. He did not buy that land to escape inheritance tax. He has decided to, you know, experiment with food production in Britain. In the long run, if we continue on the path we're on, farms are going to go from being on the floor to being a good investment. And it's got bugger all to do with inheritance tax. There we go. I've said my piece.
Rob?
Well, all the farming stuff, I'll bow to Liz's superior knowledge and experience. Everything else she said before that, I totally agree, Liz, absolutely. You're right. I mean, the difficulty we have with the two-horse system, the two-party system is, this cliche of Tory light. And however bad Labour have been, and I do think the worst aspects of the Labour government have actually been probably more so the communication than the actual actions, although I'm not defending the actions either. But the political game they've played, I've just been appalled by how bad they've been. Maybe now that Sue Gray's gone and McSweeney's taken over, hopefully we're going to turn the corner and we'll see a bit better communication. But, I mean, they've been so, so disappointing. And everything Liz was just saying, I so agree with regards with Brexit, this make Brexit work nonsense. I mean, it's ludicrous that he's still saying that, you know. And again, sorry, I don't want to just go over everything that Liz said, but I do totally agree with what she said as well. This idea that we're going to get some sort of trade deal with Trump that's going to be anything like a good trade deal is ridiculous. That the future is not with America under Trump, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's two routes we can go. We can either suck up to Trump, which would mean if we needed the trade deal, our defense budget would tomorrow have to go up to 2.5% to NATO, you know, for our NATO contribution. He would milk us dry. He really would. The alternative is to just undo Brexit. And I know there's no appetite for another referendum or anything like that, but we need to, one, just make sure that we adhere to all EU standards for food and everything else comes to that. We need to make sure there's no gap, that there's no distancing from the EU regulations. That's the first thing. The second thing is we have to honour the agreement we reached about Brexit in terms of the rights of EU citizens still living in the UK. There's all sorts of stuff that we still haven't done that we're meant to have done as part of the Brexit negotiation. And then thirdly, do you find this whenever you see there's 3 points, you get to the third and you think, what was the third?
We've.
Oh, yeah. We need to, you know, they're offering the hand of friendship with things like the free movement of young
people. They are.
And Starmer's turned around and keeps rejecting it. I think there's been a change of heart now, but you know what I mean? We should be biting their hand off for those things, you know?
I don't know. I'd argue over that. And the reason being is that we've got the birth rate number going down again. So what I think they want is to get the youth over in. We're now in competition with the EU. That's where we are. Whether we want to work with them or not, we are in competition. And so within that, I'm going, if you offer that scheme up, loads of people are going to go over to the EU and go, oh, wow, this is a really nice lifestyle, and probably consider not coming back. I mean, you might get the other direction of them coming over. But I get the impression, and the statistics from the last time when we were in the EU suggest they come over for a few years, some settle, but the majority go back. Yeah. You know, they miss their homeland for a variety of reasons. So, I mean, which is, you know, economically, that's actually quite good. You don't have to spend much money on them. You haven't had to pay for education or anything else, and they've just provided tax money. So I'm sort of looking at it and going, because we've got the difficulties with our birth rate, I would see that as a big issue if we did suddenly open that up. I would want it. I would just want the whole thing back as it is. But I can see there's a logic why they would be hesitant to do that, because that's just going to further... We have got worker shortages. There's no arguing. If you then open that up, are those kids from the EU going to fill those vacancies? Or are they not going to come over because they think Britain's racist? Are the guys in the UK going to just go over there and not
come over? I think they will come over because they want to learn English. And I think that's the big thing. So,
and we can incentivize that. I mean, I understand you, but we can incentivize them in some ways. I think you made a good point about the racism thing. I think Brexit has really tarnished the allure of Britain as a destination. But there are things the government can do to encourage youngsters to come here. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Keir Starmer saying, 999, I'm not going to allow this. He's not doing that, is it? You know, he's just got that. I'm getting to the stage where he's making me really angry. I'm really wanting to throw things at him on television, which is what I was doing with the last lot.
Yeah.
I was hoping to have stability and a bit of calm and it being a bit boring. And it's I'm back on the ceiling again.
Yeah.
I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, because obviously some people are saying it's unrealistic for him to say that we're going to go back in. It wouldn't work and the EU wouldn't take us anyway straight away. We'd have to go into the back of the queue and wait. So it wouldn't make a difference. I'm playing devil's advocate just to emphasize for viewers I haven't just lost my mind. any thoughts on that? I mean,
I agree, Alex, but that's why I have my three criteria for what you can do, you know, with in terms of adhering as far as possible to EU standards, to accepting all of these olive branches that are being put out. And again, I've done the same thing. I've forgotten what the other one was. just honouring our agreement as part of the Brexit withdrawal agreement, you know, that we're not doing all that stuff that we said we'd do. So if we can do all those three things and keep as close to Europe as possible, I agree with you, Alex. There's no way the EU is going to even countenance
that. I spoke to two British diplomats this summer out in the out in France, and they were so optimistic about the Starmer government sorting out Brexit. And, you know, the picture I got from them was really, really positive, and it's not being delivered. And everything I read, I mean, there was an article recently in Politico, I don't know if you've read it, this week, I think it was yesterday or day before yesterday. And, you know, the diplomats are really getting fed up with what the government are doing, because over in the EU, they are really saying they're worried about Trump, and they really want Britain to be saying, we're coming back and we're going to work with you on this. But Britain think they're going to be able to get some special deal. If you read Dominic Cummings, on Twitter, he thinks that there's a special way of getting some special deal with Trump, and we're going to be able to beat the European Union with all of this tech race. That's what Dom thinks.
He's so annoying. But, I'm sorry, he is so annoying. I mean, he is the guy who invested in that satellite program that didn't actually exist, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, yeah. So it's like, why are we taking any advice from him?
I definitely don't take any advice from him. I just use it more as a warning system, as in, what are they thinking? And I don't want to be looking at him. I would rather be having a government who are actually making me feel calm. And I'm not getting that at the moment. So, but those of us in agriculture are at the fore end of this. And Ollie hasn't told us what he thinks about agriculture. I've put my cards out there, and do you agree with what I said, Ollie? I know it's difficult because
I do. To tie everything together with that, I think they have the political capital to do the things that you have just said. I think if they really wanted, they could have like another referendum or have closer ties to Europe. They could definitely just tank that if there was any, you know, opposition, and then hopefully by the next election they'll be able to show some benefits from it. But what they've decided to do instead is seemingly kick up a culture war about the countryside. And like, I mean, I'm not absolutely confident in saying they've done that deliberately yet. I think if they don't back down in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I think we would be more certain that they have deliberately chosen to have a fight about this particular issue.
Do you know that in the Times they've got a poll about the farmers going on strike? And, you know, in the Times, normally about strikes, the readership hates striking people. And there's a poll and it asks, do you support the farmers going on strike? Now, what do you think the answer was for yes?
As a percentage.
As a percentage. What do you reckon? In a fairly conservative paper, who normally, I can tell you, hates strikes. They hate the striking train people. You know, it's normally not on the side of strikes.
80 something, I should think.
You think 80, Rob?
In the right wing press, I don't know.
I saw it, Liz, because you sent it through earlier. So I'm too
thin. Oh, I forgot I did that. 81%. I was absolutely amazed. 81%. So, and 77% of Times readers think that farmers shouldn't have to pay inheritance tax. So when you're in the left wing bubble, it doesn't feel like that at all. We're back in Jacinda territory here. But I think the large majority of the country are on this side. And so they're picking a battle to only really please a very small percentage of the country. And that is not a good position to be in as a government.
Yeah. I mean, I can't help thinking that
the Red Wall, well, a lot of the Red Wall probably are or would be behind farmers as well. You know, those areas, Lincolnshire and around there, Derbyshire, they're going to be behind, and so none of it makes any sense. They've decided to choose the most difficult pathway with a deal with Donald Trump, who the country really doesn't like. I can't remember what the stats are for Trump, but I think 70-odd% don't like Trump.
Yeah, it's about that.
Starmer's ratings have gone like that. So I know he started out by saying, well, I don't mind being a bit unpopular in the beginning, but wow, you don't come back from rock bottom. You really don't. Unless they've got a plan to, you know, pass the baton on to somebody else. I don't know. But I think if they went to an election with Starmer, then it's not going to go well.
Or war. They could try and, I don't know, take the Balkans again or something.
Or
fight the sheep. I don't know.
Trump, yeah.
There you go.
They'd probably be doing a favour if they invaded the White House. Done it once before, burn it to the ground. I'm not advocating that. I will I will, again, I'll put on my devil's hat for this one and just go, why should, I'm pretty sure I know where you're going to go with this. Why should farmers be exempt? You know, you run a business. It's a business, isn't it? Like, you should pay inheritance tax. It's £1 million, so obviously you've got lots of money. Again, I'm playing devil's advocate. Yeah, I cannot emphasize you can, no
well, I think that is a very valid point, and lots of people not playing devil's advocate make it. And I mean, that is the difficulty. That's why this is a culture war, is because it looks like a lot of money. You know, the press is saying farmers are hit by hundreds of thousands of pounds worth in tax bills, and people aren't going to sympathize with that, which is why this has become an issue. The fact is simply that we can't extract the money from the land. It has value because investors and people who want to put solar panels on it, and developers and all sorts of other interest groups with a lot of money, are after it, which obviously jacks the price up. But we cannot access that by farming it. And as you say, it's a business. So if the business is to pass between generations, it's taxed, which I think is damaging, frankly, to food security and the economy, because it disrupts business when really the business should be able to continue until it reaches its natural end. And then if you sell up, it is taxed and you get capital gains tax. So the problem, I think, is that it's disrupting functioning businesses. It shouldn't really matter to the economy who is running the business if it just changes hands. Nothing is actually changing, you see, but they've driven this wedge in, which will just disrupt it and make businesses go out of business prematurely, which it just seems damaging to me, you know.
I'll play devil's advocate again, but on this, because I hear where you're coming from on it, and I'm a proponent of us producing as much food as possible. So couldn't you just turn around and say, well, it'll only get rid of the small farms, you can sell it and give it to a big farm producer, and they'll be able to like make more food at a cheaper price, and everyone's going to be nice and healthy with that food that they're eating, you know, the battery hens and the steroid injected beef and everything else. Isn't that going to be like a great thing for Britain, because we'll have even cheaper food?
Well, I mean, there's lots of different
devil's advocate.
No, it's okay. I mean, we are facing the Americanization of British food, which is something I know Liz is very passionate about. You are already seeing not for EU stickers on stuff, because the stuff we eat in this country now is not suitable for human consumption in Europe. But the facts of the matter, I would argue anyway, is that family farms are very valuable because they allow production beneath the cost, production beneath the cost of production, essentially. We, for example, used to produce milk, but we could deal with very low prices by essentially not taking a wage ourselves. We would just live poor. We would continue producing cheap, nutritious food, and that would benefit the consumer and therefore society as a whole. Whereas if we are forced to sell up and you have agribusiness, if you like, take over, then they're going to have employees on wage. So they're not going to be as flexible on price. If they have a hit 1 year, they can't say to all their 50 employees, right, we can't pay you this year. You're going to have to just work without wage. It's not going to happen. So then they'll be forced out of business, and the food system will be either much more expensive and cost will go up for the consumer, or it will all just fall apart once it gets a big shock. So I think family farms are resilient, which is not very pleasant for the family farmers themselves. But that's something that we're risking losing if, you know, and I think society as a whole benefits from that, and farmers are prepared to continue doing it. But that's the risk.
And don't forget the passing down of knowledge of each farm. You know, when you farm generation to generation, each farm is different. Every field, each field is different. And you've got that insight and knowledge of that farm. You know that one field is, you know, perhaps a bit saltier than the other one, or, you know, one's got, you know, you've got all of that insider knowledge, which is specific to the geography of the farm as well, and food production, which you can't learn on a computer. And you can't even learn at an agricultural college, because you learn it from a tiny one by growing up on a farm and basically giving the country slave labor from a tiny age. And that's how it works. But if you remove that, and it was the post-war agreement that we would subsidize food, we subsidize steel, we subsidize American landowners to chop down trees and chip them and ship them over here to burn a supposedly green energy for electricity. So why would a government not subsidize food? Because food security is national security. Giving an inheritance tax exemption is, in effect, subsidizing without having to pay someone to do the admin to write the check. It's actually a cheap way of subsidizing food. So the way that they would, if they wanted to stop the loophole for people that are not producing food, what they ought to do is produce an exemption on the income. If somebody's earning 80% of their income from agriculture and farming, they then should be exempt from inheritance tax. It's very easy. So what's happening now is people like mine, that, you know, that I know locally, live in big houses with a few acres, which they don't grow any food, but they're registered as a farm because they've got a few acres, and they work as a professional. I mean, one I know works as a professional, very successful architect. He can easily afford to pay the inheritance tax, but he's probably just under that threshold, so he won't have to pay it. So it doesn't make any sense, the policy, unless they're completely incompetent or they want to cause a class war and they're preparing for the American trade deal and Trump is going to give us a bucket of sick of chlorinated chicken and hormone-fed beef. And that would destroy British farming anyway, and it will, because they can produce food cheaper than us because they use all of this shit and they intensively farm, which is really bad for the environment, is really bad for animal welfare. And that is the only way you get cheap food. We have had cheapest food because we farm sustainably, but because it's been subsidized within the EU.
I thought shit was good for farming.
Well, it is. You know, animal shit is good for farming, yes, but
not political shit, less so.
not hormone fed and the chemicals that they put into that mass processed food, and a lot of sugar is very, 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 very bad. You only have to look at Americans.
Yeah, the fundamental thing that the Labour Party have missed with this is that agricultural policy is food policy, and food policy is about nutrition. So when they're tanking the entire agricultural industry for a bit more money for the NHS, and they're going to let in all this cheap American crap for the NHS, I haven't done the maths, but I'm sure they will lose money doing that. Because our national diet will get worse, which means our health will get worse, which means the NHS is going to have to deal with more nutritional diseases. They need to start looking at all
this. And Putin will love it because we will be food insecure. You can hold a country to ransom if they haven't got enough food.
I find that argument very similar to the winter fuel allowance, by not allowing these people to have a bit of extra money to be able to pay for their heating. That means that they're more likely to end up in hospital and they're costing us money through the NHS. They could be in hospital with pneumonia, and then that's several days, and then they've got to make sure that someone's got to be out. And if they're not able to have anyone there, then you get the thing that they call bed blocking. So I always thought it's interesting, because I was looking at Trump's foreign policies, and they're all short term. None of them are long term thinking. And one of the things that you sort of look at with what Labour are doing, it's all short term gain. I think they're doing better than previous administrations in the fact that they're trying to put some investment in, but I don't think they've got a long term strategy. You look at
well, in
like
their defence, though, they could change the strategy when they get into the long term, because some of the projections say it's going to go well for like 5 years and then sort of peter out. But in 5 years' time, they could do something different.
There's possibility in that, but you put the foundations in now, and I don't feel like they are. In fact, they're doing the opposite. So it's like you're pointing out with and Putin, and he's going to take. So according to that Trump deal, if it goes through, which is possible, that's a fifth of land. That's a fifth of the Ukraine gone. That's farmland. And even if you did get that land back from the Ukraine, it's pretty much totaled. So the example I always give is the farmland in France. It's still bringing up, like, I think 1,000, maybe it's more, maybe it's 10,000 items of ammunition out of the ground every year. It's 100 years later, and they're still pulling out ammunition from the ground. It's not going to surprise me if you're going to have a similar situation in Ukraine. So you've just had a fifth of the Ukraine, which, you know, is known for production of wheat. That's where its flag comes from. The yellow is to symbolize wheat. Gone. That's just gone. Then you've got the reduction in manpower over there because people have killed or died, and you've got the same issues with Russia. So you're sort of going, that's a concern for food security. If you're a long-term planner, if you were sort of going along the lines of Bismarck or some of the other ones that have gone long-term planning in the past, you'd be going, right, food security is pretty essential. Steel production is pretty essential. We need those guaranteed. And interestingly, energy production in the EU looks somewhat secure. Serbia's just got several trillion in lithium discovered in a valley, which locals seem to be pissed off about and trying to stop from being dug up. If you've got lithium, you've got batteries. You've got steel, you've got batteries. You've got plastic, you've got batteries. And then Norway's just found like the largest amount of black rock, I think it's called, for solar panels. Like it's actually doubled the world's capacity, which means if you've got solar and you've got batteries and you've got sunshine, you're actually, as an area, sufficient for energy, which is one of the most important things. You know, you're self-sufficient. And then you've got your agriculture policy, which is also going to be important. But it seems that farmers in the EU and UK are being hammered across the board. And it's also climate change.
Farmers haven't got it as bad as us. No,
I know. I didn't say that. I said they're getting hammered.
They just tick off more than we do.
I didn't say that. I said they're getting hammered. And they're also having problems with climate change. So I think olives and olive oil production has gone down 30% 2 years in a row. In part, it's being claimed because of climate change and too much heat. So, and you've got literally a lunatic on our border. Poland's like geared itself up to be ready to deal with Putin. Like, it's got a huge investment. I think it's one of the highest GDP investments in Europe. And it's got some of the most advanced weaponry on its border ready to go. So you're going, this is when, in long-term planning, you'd be going, right, well, we better make sure our farming's up to speed. Better make sure we've got steel. Better make sure we've got energy resources sorted.
Yeah.
So if it does go to war, we can actually handle ourselves. And it appears it's not. And it appears that the Brexiteers have literally done the antithesis of what you need to do in a situation like this, which is instead of coming together, separating, and then arguing. I think there was a Reform Party guy this week who was on Politics Live. Yeah, it was an MP. For Reform, bemoaning translators existing in the NHS, again attacking foreigners.
Rupert Lowe.
There you go. And you're going, the only thing I'll finish off on this, and I'll bring you in, Ollie. The only thing that came to my mind is, and I would have pushed back on this and gone, so what? Do you expect everyone in Wales only to speak Welsh and that no one should speak English? The fuck are you talking about? Fucking idiot. Like, is that what he's going to do? I mean, it's insane what they come up with. And I'll finish on this. I found a clip last week for a video I was doing on Nazi propaganda. And I found a clip of in the Nazi propaganda film, I think it's Triumph of the Will, where you've got a group of women complaining about foreigners speaking foreign languages. It's a Nazi propaganda film. They're complaining about Yiddish and saying how everything needs to be spoken in German. And you're like, fucking hell, you're literally out of the German Nazi textbook for propaganda. It's fucking wild. And no one's pushed back on him on this stuff. I think Ash from Navora Media did a half-decent job of like telling him to shut up. But why are you having people like that on there when they're saying stuff that's right out of the Nazi textbook? It doesn't make any sense. Ollie, I can see you want to jump in.
It's fine. I was just going to say that this has also been related to the farming point, because Farage has said that the reason Labour is attacking farmers is so that they're dispossessed and then they're going to build houses for immigrants on all of the land. So it's so frustrating, because the Tory party, I think, needlessly over the course of the last government made immigration an issue. I think they essentially chose to do that, and the people who benefited from that were Farage and his various parties. And if the Labour Party are choosing to have a fight over farmers, the sides are all different. Obviously, the left wing are now in government, and the right wing press are defending us, as frustrating as that is as someone who considers themselves to be left wing. But Farage will benefit from this, because Farage has leapt on it and said, this is about immigration. They're attacking, British rural people. And the beneficiaries are going to be foreigners, you see. So it's exactly the same thing. The major parties pick a culture war. Farage wins every time. They're picking these battles and they just can't win them. It's terribly depressing.
It almost feels like they're not seeing that they're being played and following the same playbook that caused the Democrats to in part fail. Go on, Rob, I can see you nodding. And then
I'm just agreeing. This is all, Farage is the only winner. I agree with Ollie.
Yeah. It's frightening. Yeah, it is frightening. Before the last election, I remember seeing Stuart Rose, ex Marks and Spencer's, being interviewed on Times Radio just before the election. And he was asked, if Farage ended up the leader of the Conservative Party, what he'd do. And he said he'd leave the country. And now, this is only a few weeks later, we're actually dealing with the reality that Farage could clean up and potentially get into office. I mean, that is scary.
Don't worry, we've got the Sunday roast and we got the lamp. On that note, everyone, thanks very much. Pleasure having you all on. Check their links out in the description. If you really enjoyed the show, hit that like and subscribe button. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be sure to tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Are we allowed to say fucking? Sorry, I don't.
They'll be bleeped out. And so, swearing's allowed. Jumping in each of the conversations is definitely encouraged. Try not to interrupt, but the swearing's kept for the podcast and it's deleted for YouTube generally.
Oh, okay. You delete it.
Yeah. Well, I'll bleep it out.
Sorry
about that. No. Carry on. No. You know, try and be as much free speech as we can. Go on, Rob.